This morning, I want to do a little prep for the exam. And it's not that the exam is hard, but I taught things a little differently this year, and then I went back and looked at previous exams. It's like, oh, that's right. I should have gone over that. Or that's a really good problem. I better make sure they can work that one. Only because there's some questions you may be able to guess, like Le Chat Liaise. Hello, there's going to be something on Le Chat Liaise. You just know that. But to help dilute some of the mathematical problems, for those of you who aren't as good as at math and you do better at concept, I wanted to add one topic to the exam, which we will discuss again as long as you all want or need to. And because it's a relatively simple topic, in fact, I will just summarize the whole discussion again. Really, there are two graphs involved here. One, which is our familiar energy distribution. Forgot. There we go. So one of these is the familiar energy distribution diagram. The other one is a reaction coordinate diagram. So depending on what the question is asking about, one of these diagrams might be more relevant than the other. If we're asking about what is the effect of a catalyst, well, it's the fact that it changes the reaction pathway. And I know this doesn't look like the one that I drew the other day. That's on purpose, to say that you never know what a catalyst's mechanism is going to be. And no, there's no questions about mechanisms because kinetics in general is not on the exam. But we've already talked about activation energy so much, and we've already had the graph on the exam. I thought an easy slam dunk question for you all to get some easy points would be asked something about this question. Because the equilibrium part of it that you should be able to handle already is the fact that there's no change in the heat of reaction. So there's no change in the energy in the reactants and products. There's no effect on equilibrium. No change in energy of reactants or products by adding a catalyst, to complete the thought a little bit. And that means no effect on equilibrium. Now, the part that is a little bit more related to kinetics is this energy distribution diagram. But this is what I always feel is one of the easier topics in kinetics. Just thinking about the fact that matches don't light themselves. You have to add a little bit of energy, and that's what this activation energy is. But there's two different activation energies on this diagram. One that is for the catalyzed reaction, and one that's for the uncatalyzed. And no, you wouldn't be expected necessarily to draw any specific kind of diagram for any specific reaction. Just something, it's open notes, folks, remember. So some general, like the one I'm drawing right here, some general diagram just to show what the difference is. The fact that the activation energy changes. So uncatalyzed reaction, I'll say un, fewer molecules have the energy. That's why it's slower. For the catalyzed reaction, more molecules. So if I ignore the fussiness of what I said the other day, that a catalyzed reaction is not just that it lowers the activation energy, it provides a new reaction pathway that has the lower activation energy. But if I wanted to simplify, I would say it's got lower activation energy, which means more molecules with enough energy to react, which is why it's faster. That is what a catalyst does. Now a few problems to take a little bit different perspective on the equilibrium types of calculations we've been doing in class. So in other words, we've been really focused on ice problems in solving for equilibrium concentrations, which is the mathematically more difficult problem. I forgot to do a couple of the easy problems. And again, easy points, easy problems. That's why the instructor's doing this. So, for example, this is problem number 17 point, what was this? 46 in the text. And no, it doesn't necessarily mean that a textbook problem is exactly what's going to show up in the text. I've been known to do it for mathematical problems because someone else already spent all the effort to do the calculations and come up with the numbers. It's like, that's good enough. So sometimes they vary much like our textbook examples. But I don't make an exam just based off the textbook problems. And those problems that are there are only if we've gone over something similar in class, like exactly what's happening now. Because it says there's this reaction that has a Kp that's equal to 6.5 times 10 to the fourth. 6.5 times 10 to the fourth at 308 Kelvin. And the reaction is nitrogen monoxide reacting with chlorine gas to make two molecule that I should be able to name but can't think of the name right off the top of that. NOCl. So it says at equilibrium, and I'm going to write it in red. At equilibrium. It says that the pressure of nitrogen monoxide, the partial pressure in other words, is 0.35 atmospheres, and it says the pressure of chlorine is 0.10 atmospheres. And it says, what is the partial pressure of NOCl at equilibrium? Well, before you set up any kind of ice problem, why do you think I underlined the equilibrium? Because there is no ice problem needed if everything is involving equilibrium. In other words, we can write the expression for Kp. Everything's a gas, so it all goes into the equilibrium expression. We raise things to the appropriate powers. And then we substitute. Well, okay, mostly. We know what Kp is. It's 6.5 times 10 to the fourth. We know that it's going to be NOCl squared that stays there because that's what we're solving for. But we know what the pressures, and I'm so sorry, I wrote concentration symbols. Bad. Minus 5 for Dr. Gray. There we go. So there's pressures. And we can substitute 0.35 for the pressure of nitrogen monoxide and 0.10 for the pressure of chlorine. Now, to save time, I'm not going to solve the problem because the rest of it is just calculator work because we did all the concept.
Is it 10^4 or 10 to the 4?
10 to the 4th. So it's a very straightforward problem as long as you catch that part where it says it's at equilibrium. So any questions about this example? Okay, so now this next example is more complicated than anything that would be on the exam, but because we're eventually going to come back to acids and bases, it was the simplest alternate kind of problem I could find. So just like this one we just did, it's another type of equilibrium calculation, but one that doesn't involve an ice table. So now let me show you one that would. And it's kind of working backwards one of the problems that you would be expected to work, because I already gave the big hint, you're probably going to be doing some kind of calculate the pH problem, just like we've done in class. But here is a problem where it says hypochlorous acid, in other words, bleach, has a pKa of 7 point... Wait, I'm sorry, that's the wrong problem. Never mind. Here's the problem. It says in a 0.2 molar solution, aqueous, of a weak acid. The acid dissociates 3%. And what it says is, calculate Ka. Now, we usually have problems where we're given the equilibrium constant and we run a nice problem to get to the concentrations. Well, this is effectively a step backwards. So we don't know what the formula of this acid is, but we know that it dissociates to make an H plus and it makes an A minus. Now, we know what the starting initial concentration is. It tells us it's 0.20 molar. And we always assume 0 for the H plus, 0 for the acid. This sounds like the kind of Ka problem we have worked. So here's the difference. We would get minus X plus X plus X, just like our familiar problem. We'd get 0.20 minus X, and we'd get X, and we'd get X. But the problem tells us that X is equal to 0.03 times 0.20, because the 0.03 is 3% of the original concentration. In other words, it's a little sneaky, but the problem tells us what X is. And 3% of 0.20 is 0.06. So that means that the concentration of HA at equilibrium is equal to 0.20 minus 0.006, which is equal to 0.194. Concentration of H plus is equal to concentration of HA, which is equal to 0.0006. And then you would substitute Ka would equal to H plus times A minus over HA, which is equal to Too many O's. Oh, 6 squared over 0.194, which, because this is so easy to finish, let's calculate that point. 6 squared divided by 0.194, and I get for this 1.86 times 10 to the negative 1, 2, 3, 4 power, which sounds like formic acid or something like that. So no, you're not working this kind of problem. The point is, you might see a problem where you're given X.
Yes, sir?
Yes.
So is this just out of curiosity, would that concentration be the pH value?
You'd take the negative log to get the pH, sure.
Okay, so anytime you're measuring the concentration of acid, you're measuring the concentration of how much hydrogen is in the solution?
Yes. Well, no. Okay, no. No. If you're measuring the concentration of an acid, that's HA. If you're measuring the concentration of H+, that is what is related to pH.
Okay, that's what I was trying to ask, but I guess I didn't say it right. But yeah, okay, makes a lot of sense.
Yes, to answer a question from the chat, A would stand for some general formula for acid, because it doesn't tell us which one it is, because we don't have to know in order to solve the problem. Normally we need to know the acid so we could go look at a table of Ka values. This one solves backwards to get the Ka. And notice there's no quadratic or anything needed, and there's no simplifications needed even. In fact, I want to write that in a different color. No simplifications needed. Why? There's no quadratic. All you have to do is substitute values in. So there's no reason to simplify. Just put the values in. At this point, we're going to shift back over to kinetics and tackle one major kinetics topic for the day. Unless I somehow manage to just run right through this whole thing. We've talked in kinetics now a couple of times about what a rate law is. And the general form of a rate law is there's always a rate constant, and there might be some concentrations there. One question could be, how can we come up with what the rate law is? And so here is one of those really important statements. If the mechanism of the rate limiting step is known, the rate law can be written from the stoichiometry of that reaction. We've already done that when I started talking at the very beginning about examples of chemical reactions. We did this substitution thing where hydroxide kicked out a bromine, or we waited for bromine to fall off so water could substitute. One way or another, there was some kind of substitution going on. And the whole point of that was to come up with an example of a rate-limiting step. And the whole point of that was to say, in the rate-limiting step, it's only those molecules that participate that have any effect on the rate of the reaction. But now turn that around. If you know what the rate-limiting step is, if you know what the mechanism is, you know which molecules participate, they automatically go in the rate law. But There is absolutely no connection. Between an overall stoichiometric expression and the rate law for a reaction. And we've had that example as well. In fact, apologies for those of you using paper. Let me give you an example of, or rewrite this example of, how knowing the reaction process lets us write the rate law. So here's that same diagram you've seen of electrons moving around, hydroxide bumping into carbon, kicking out the bromine. So remember that both molecules are evolved simultaneously. In only one reaction step. And so that's why the rate of the reaction is dependent on both of these concentrations. But there's this other reaction. Which I know you're probably getting tired of seeing this, but there's a Russian expression that translates as repetition is the mother of learning. So here's this other reaction that we know the full mechanism. And we know that this first step is the rate limiting step. But if you wrote this reaction out in a Chem 1A style, you would write this. And so we can see stoichiometrically two reagents. But because the fact that we have this one rate limiting step and only one reagent is in it, it highlights the fact that there's no connection between the stoichiometric equation and the rate law, because the stoichiometric equation, that's just your baking recipe. How many of this and how many of that do you have to put together? But how you bake, to carry the analogy on, that doesn't figure into the ingredients themselves. So that's the point of this last example. Two reagents participate just like the above reaction, but they have different rate laws because they occur by different mechanisms. But what if we don't know any of this? Is there some way that we can try to come up with a rate law for reaction? And the answer is yes. And that's what I really wanted to spend the time on today. So if you could take your screenshots here. And now allow me to cheat by looking at some previous notes of mine. And I will try to be a good instructor and give you a clue what we're talking about. This is the method of initial rates. So let's say that we do this. Let's say we have some mythical chemical reaction that involves a bunch of reagents all at once. And let's make it simpler where I just say, we make some kind of product. What if we did this? What if we ran the reaction several times? And so we did different trials, and we looked at the initial rate, meaning how fast was the reaction going right at the beginning of the reaction. Now, technically, that's a kind of instantaneous rate. So there's some conceptual issues that we can grapple with later on. But let's say that we have our initial concentration of A, our initial... One too many I's there. Initial concentration of B, and initial concentration of C. So I do the reaction several times, and I change the concentrations to see if they have any effect on the rate of the reaction. So here's some example concentrations I came up with for, must have been a past test problem or something, hint. Not that I encourage this behavior, but is there some, like, internet drinking game out there where every time Dr. Gray says hint? Okay, so there's our initial concentrations. Now, here are some fictitious rates. And the numbers are totally made up just to make the problem workable. So let me give you a summary of what we're about to do. The summary is this, that in the method of initial rates, a standard comparison reaction is run. Better phrase, a control reaction is run. Then, the concentration of the initial concentration
professor, is this a new concept?
Yep.
So
in the method of initial rates, gosh, I didn't even complete my sentence because I'm so eager to get through it. Let's try again. Epic fail. In the method of initial rates, a control reaction is first run, then the initial concentration... of each reagent is individually varied in order to determine its effect on the rate of reaction. So, what do we do? Let's take an example here, because there's some more easily observable behavior. If I look at concentration of A in trial 1 versus trial 2, I can see that for these other concentrations, they're the same, only A changes. So the effect of A can be determined. By comparing trials 1 and 2. Now, we don't know what the rate law is yet, right? So we know that we have rate of trial 2 divided by rate of trial 1 is equal to K times A raised to some power times B raised to some power times C raised to some power. And that's the same thing down below here. Well, since the concentrations of B and C are the same, they're going to cancel out. The concentrations of A are different. So what do we end up with? We end up with K times concentration of A in trial 2 raised to the A power divided by K times the concentration in trial 1 raised to the A power. Now this simplifies even further to concentration of A 2 divided by concentration of 1 raised to A. So what do we have to do? Oh, is this a limiting reagent kind of thing? No. It's a very different type of problem where, how do I say this in a way that helps to distinguish the difference? So in a limiting reagent problem, what you're looking for is an imbalance in the number of moles of each reagent compared to the reaction stoichiometry. Here, reaction stoichiometry doesn't matter. We're trying to probe and figure out what's going on in the rate-limiting step. And the way that we're being sneaky about it is that we ideally change the concentration of only one reagent at a time. Why exactly? Because the math I just did here. Because if you have these two rates, what happens in the second trial versus the first trial? And you just take the ratio of rate. Well, that means we could put in the rate laws. And since the concentration of B and C are the same, they cancel. And all you're left with is concentration of A. So in other words, to translate this whole thing into English, the ratio of rates in trials 1 and 2 depends only on the concentration of A. So if I could move to the next page, take your screenshots. Then all I do is solve. I put in 9.6 times 10 to negative 5 divided by 6.0 times 10 to negative 6 is equal to 0.96 divided by 0.24 raised to the a power. So calculator, calculator, you get 16 is equal to 4 to the a power, which means a equals 2. Which means you know the rate law is now k a squared b raised to the b c raised to the c. We were able to solve for one of the things. Now let me show you with the other one. One of the other ones. If I compare trial B and trial 1 and trial 3, well now only B is different. So I'm going to look at the rate of trial 3 versus trial 1. No. To make the math easier, I'm going to do this. I'm going to take rate of reaction 1 divided by rate of reaction 3. Why? Because it's going to depend only on the concentration of B in reaction 1 versus the concentration of B in reaction 3 raised to the B power. And this is because the concentration of A and the concentration of C are the same.
At the well reaction you, equation, you mean R?
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm confused.
So A and C are the same in trials 1 and 3. So now we substitute 6.0 times 10 to the negative 6 divided by 2.0 times 10 to the negative 6 is equal to 0.100 divided by 0.034 raised to the b power. You get 3 is equal to 3 raised to the b, which means b is equal to 1. So now we know that the rate law is k a squared b. And now we just have to do a comparison to figure out what C is. C is a little trickier for this particular example. So unfortunately, I'm going to have to continue it on Wednesday after the break.